tickets, if you will. Well, there's going to be three returns. And the first and being Zerubbabel brought the group back under his guidance, I guess you'd say. He was eventually named governor. And then under his guidance and the Lord helping out for sure, they got the temple built. Well, as we get into the seventh chapter, we're going to learn of Ezra, of who the book is written about. And you think, well, there's only 10 chapters, and from 7, 8, 9, and 10 is Ezra, but yet the whole book is written, is called Ezra. Well, that's because he was the scribe. It never completely says this in the scripture. There's a couple of places that he writes and refers to I. So it leads us to believe that he was the writer of the book of Ezra. Some believe that he was the writer of Chronicles. They don't refer to him as being the writer. They just call him the chronicler. So it's our belief that he would have been the one to have wrote this. As we get into this, so y'all just bear with us. A couple of thoughts, like I said, why wouldn't the book been named after Zerubbabel and thing like that, unless Ezra was the one that wrote it. The things that we try to get out of these next few chapters is what Ezra done and how he followed the Lord. And honestly, when I think of Ezra, I think of the zeal that he had. I see some men in this church that has the same zeal. And I believe he did have a zeal for God, for God's law. And that spurred Ezra to lead a group of Jews back to Israel. So this would be the second group to return. The third would be with Nehemiah, and we may get into that later on. But that's some of the stuff that we're going to talk about during this seventh, eighth, ninth chapter or so. Anybody got any thoughts towards any of this? Feel free to jump in. We're all just studying this together. Probably going to do a little bit of reading and then maybe just commenting on that as we go. But something to... let's just go ahead and get into the seventh chapter. Now after these things, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra the son of Seraiah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah. Now let me stop there, because I kind of get pulled into these things and kind of got to understand it, I guess, to who these individuals are and what were their background. And so a thought that came to my mind was Ezra part of the ones that would have been exiled and then came back? And I don't believe that's true. I don't believe the time frame would allow that. I believe that Ezra would have been born in Babylon. So when we say that he came back, he didn't come back. I believe he was born in Babylon. I believe from that point he was coming into Jerusalem for the first time, and he had a desire to see and to see this temple. Of course, he'd never seen any of them. He had a desire to do what God wanted him to do and to bring people back to help them in worshiping the Lord. So with that, we can kind of go back to a couple of things in 2 Kings. If you go to 2 Kings 25 and 18, it's going to give his father's name as being one that was exiled. 2 Kings 25 and 18. And the captain of the guard took Seraiah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the three keepers of the door. So what this was talking about, this was Nebuchadnezzar had told him to take them and have them exit. And that was his father's name, Seraiah, there. And then if you go to 1 Chronicles 6, 13 and 14, this also speaks of this. 1 Chronicles 6. Thirteen and 14, it says, and Shalem begat Hilkiah, Hilkiah begat Azariah, And Azariah begat Sariah, and Sariah begat Jehozadak. And Jehozadak went into captivity. Now, the reason why I read that is you don't see the name of Ezra there. You maybe read of his older brother. But Sariah there begat Jehozadak. So that's from that information, we take it as he was not part of the exile, that it would have been till he got into Babylon, Sariah did, and then that's when Ezra would have been born, and then that from that point he would come back in, or he would come to Jerusalem for the first time whenever he decides to, and the Lord allows him to go here in just a little bit. So just had to kind of dig that out a little bit. The son, going back to Ezra's second, seventh chapter, second verse, the son of Shalem, the son of Zadok, and the son of Ahitub, the son of Amariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Marioth, the son of Zariah, the son of Uzziah, the son of Buckai, the son of Abishua, and the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the chief priest. Now, they went through that lineage just to show you that Ezra's genealogy goes back to Aaron the priest. He was a Levite. He goes back through the lineage of the chief priest. This Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And King granted him all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. And there went up some of the children of Israel, and of the priests and the Levites and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims into Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. So we've got a timeline established here. This was in the seventh year of Artaxerxes. This would have been roughly 59 years after the temple was finished. So I know that was just a page or two back, but you got to understand there's a lot of time there that changed since that temple was set up. A lot of things have happened. Physically, they had the temple built, but spiritually, they weren't where they needed to be. And I think that was honestly Ezra's calling, with him being, as it referred to him, they said he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. So he knew his stuff. He knew how to teach it. He knew what it was all about. I'm sure he transcribed it at some point. I'm sure he knew this to the point that he didn't have to look at it. He knew the law. That's the way I believe what he meant by the scribe. So not only could he write it, but I believe he knew it dear enough to his heart that he basically had it memorized. And as it refers to in the seventh verse, and they talked about the priest and the Levites and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims. The Nethinims kind of looked that one up to figure out what that was, and that that name is the meaning. It says those given to the priest and the Levites. Well, we know they also called some of them very similar to tributes, and they may have been back in Moses' time. Moses assigned prisoners of war to the priest. Well, that's what these Nethinims were. They were more or less, I guess you would say, like a early slave to start with, but they weren't treated real badly. They were just brought in, hey, this is what your job's going to be. We read about back when we studied Joshua, the Gibeonites had kind of faked them out as to who they were, and they told that they were from a way off land and things like that. Well, they ended up, they was basically only just a few days' journey away. And what did Joshua do after he found that out? After they were deceived, then he made them to be woodcutters and water bearers. And you can read that back in Joshua 9 and 27. But that was referred to as tributes. But these Nethinims are very much the same thing. And again, going back to that where Moses had made those prisoners, you can read that back in Numbers 31, that he took one soul of 500, and there was a total of 16,000, so they had ended up being like 32 different people assigned to the Levites at that point just to do whatever they needed done. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then they had mentioned the porters, and a porter is basically a doorkeeper, the best I can come up with. And that you can read that back in 2 Samuel 18 and 26, and you'll see that was given as a doorkeeper at that point. We'll carry on. In the 8th verse, and he came up to Jerusalem in the 5th month, which was in the 7th year of the king, for upon the first day of the 1st month began he to go up from Babylon. And on the first day of the 5th month came he to Jerusalem. So a 4-month journey from first day of the 1st month through first day of the 5th month. That's a total of 4 months took them to travel. I don't know the route. Tried to look into that. Couldn't imagine what all they went through to get there. But we'll read more about that here in just the next few verses. But 4 months travel that they came over. So that was what was pointed out here in the 9th. And as we read through the rest of this chapter, pretty much it's going to talk about what they did to prepare to get there. So reading through on the, it said on the first day of the 5th month came he to Jerusalem according to the good hand of his God upon him. And in the 10th verse, just really appreciate this verse. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. And Sister Sheila mentioned this country earlier, and boy, that's what it amounts to. We're missing God's teaching out there. It's just not being taught. And it most certainly isn't being done. A lot goes into that. And for us to teach it, we have to know it. Not for us to be raised up, but for the Lord's cause to be done, I believe he expects us to do some of it. We have a work to do. And there in the last part, and to teach it in Israel statutes and judgments. And how many times have we read in the last few books about keep my statutes, keep my commandments. And we've seen some mighty, very knowledgeable men fall because they would not do these things. We've seen Saul fall because of that. We've seen Solomon fall because of that. They would not keep his statutes and his commandments. In the 11th, now this is the copy of the letter that the king of Artaxerxes gave unto Ezra the priest, the scribe, even a scribe of the words of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes to Israel. So what we're about to read is the king had made a letter to give to Ezra. And there's no way to say what good that this done. And we have no idea. I don't. If Artaxerxes ever knew the Lord, he speaks very highly of him. I don't know that he ever knew him. But, boy, he's sure showing some things that he fears the Lord. He's showing some things that he recognizes who he is. But to take a Persian king and to hand these things to Ezra and to give him this letter that he could go wherever he pleased and not be taxed and not be made a tribute and to be able to go and take the things that he needed. They would give him animals. They would give him food. They would give him salt. They would give him whatever that they needed for their journey. And also, this letter gave them the ability to go across to the other side of Jordan and the governors over there and not mess with them. And later on, Nehemiah will pretty much get that same thing. He's going to get some of the same request. But Nehemiah was a cupbearer. Ezra was a scribe. But yet, he had somehow, he had made a name for himself there in Persia that Artaxerxes knew who he was. Now think about how large of a place, how much land that we're talking about here in Persia. I think, is it in Esther, Brother Jeff? They talk about how many countries that Persia was over in the first chapter. And, but somewhere around in there, I think it was like 27-something countries or something. Like, oh, no, 127. I need to go read it. It's in there in Esther, I think it is. If we can find that, maybe we'll just turn over to it real quick. Brother Jeff dig that up for us. If you go to the book of Esther, first chapter, first verse, it says, from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces. So 127 provinces. And this was the Ahasuerus. This was the king just prior to Artaxerxes. And they most certainly hadn't lost anything at this point. They were still every bit as big as what they were then, if not bigger now. So somehow, some way, Ezra was able to influence this mighty king that he would write this letter and allow him to travel. So keep that in mind as we read through this. Also keep in mind these people that will be allowed to go on their own free will, mind you. We'll read that in just a bit. But on their own free will, they didn't have to leave this comfortable life that they had in Persia. Was it everything that they wanted? No. But was it more comfortable than what it was fixing to be for a four-month travel back to Jerusalem? I guarantee it. Would it be more comfortable than what they're going to find in Jerusalem and what they're going to have to spiritually go through and physically go through? I guarantee it. They could have took the easy road out and stayed in Babylon under Persian rule and not have to do what they're going to do. So just keep these things in mind. So let me do the 11th there again. Now this is the copy of the letter of the king Artaxerxes gave unto Ezra the priest, the scribe, even a scribe of the words of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes to Israel. Artaxerxes, king of kings, unto Ezra the priest, a scribe of the law of the God of heaven, perfect peace, and at such a time. I make a decree that all they of the people of Israel and of his priests and Levites in my realm, which are minded of their own free will, to go up to Jerusalem, go with thee. For as much as thou art sent of the king and of his seven counselors to inquire concerning Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of thy God, which is in thine hand, and to carry the silver and gold which the king and his counselors have freely offered unto the God of Israel, whose habitation is in Jerusalem, and all the silver and the gold that thou canst find in all the province of Babylon, with the freewill offering of the people and of the priest, offering willingly for the house of their God, which is in Jerusalem, that thou mayest buy speedily with this money bullocks, rams, lambs, and their meat offerings and their drink offerings, and offer them upon the altar of the house of your God, which is in Jerusalem. And whatsoever shall seem good to thee and to thy brethren to do with the rest of the silver and gold that do after the will of your God. The vessels also that are given thee for the service of the house of thy God, those deliver thou before the God of Jerusalem. And whatsoever more shall be needful for the house of thy God, which thou shalt have occasion to bestow, bestow it out of the king's treasure house. And I, even I, Artaxerxes the king, do make a decree to all the treasures which are beyond the river, that whatsoever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of the God of heaven, shall require of you, it be done speedily. Unto 100 talents of silver, and to 100 measures of wheat, and to 100 baths of wine, and to 100 baths of oil and salt, without prescribing how much. Whatsoever is commanded by the God of heaven, let it be diligently done for the house of the God of heaven. For why should there be wrath against the realm of the king and his sons? Also, we certify you that touching any of the priests and Levites, singers, porters, Nethinims, or ministers of this house of God, it shall not be lawful to impose toll, tribute, or custom upon them. And thou, Ezra, after the wisdom of thy God that is in thine hand, set magistrates and judges which may judge all the people that are beyond the river, all such as know the laws of thy God, and teach ye them that know them not. And whosoever will not do the law of thy God and the law of the king, let judgment be executed speedily upon him, whether it be unto death or to banishment or to confiscation of goods or to imprisonment. We'll stop there. I believe that's where Artaxerxes' portion stops. Wow, what power was given to Ezra at that point. And I believe because he knew he would be a good steward of it. He knew he wasn't going to do things that would come back. I believe the king also recognized this to be a good economical thing for them. Don't get me wrong. I don't know that he's just doing this because he fears the Lord, although he said he did. He was worried about his wrath coming on him or his sons. But I believe he also knew if he went back and he grew that area and that he would able to keep his thumb on them there just a little bit, that he would prosper because of that. So I don't want to not think that he wasn't somewhat looking into his own interest here. But he gave Ezra the power to go back, gave him basically all the money that they were going to need for sure, gave them all their provisions that they were going to need, and then told them to make sure nobody touched them, couldn't touch them, couldn't tax them, couldn't make them pay tolls. And then he gave them the ability to go and say, now you set up your own judges and your magistrates, and when you do all of that, I'm also going to give you the power. If you need to kill somebody, you kill them. Now, this is completely unprecedented. I don't think you'll see that throughout the rest of the Bible. The Romans would eventually take over, and we know kind of how that law worked a little bit, but the Romans would have to have the law over the Jews before they could kill anybody. The Jews never had that kind of power, but they did here. They did here, amongst their own anyway. So just, how much ability that he was giving them. And then we recognize by what Ezra says in the 27 and 28, blessed be the Lord God of our fathers, which has put such a thing as this in the king's heart to beautify the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem, and hath extended mercy unto me before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty princes. And I was strengthened as the hand of the Lord my God was upon me, and I gathered together out of Israel chief men to go up with me. Any thoughts on that in chapter 7? I know we kind of rushed through that pretty quick, but definitely a lot going on. Just something else to think about. When the king was dethroned and they first went into exile to Babylon, Judah was no longer an independent nation and never would be after that until May the 14th, 1948 is when they were reestablished. That's a long time. That's a long time. So just recognize that when from that point on, the rest of the Bible, they were never an independent nation until... And I just started reading the history of that. I'll be honest with you. I think it was the Ottoman Empire that owned or that laid claim to that area around World War I. And after that, the British took over. And then the British got tired of trying to keep the peace over there. And then they approached the United Nations with it. And then at that point, they said, hey, just let them be their own nation in 1948. And just right after, I mean the day after they were proclaimed to be an independent nation, they were invaded by Egypt to the south, the Transjordan, which had been to the east side, Syria on the north side, and Lebanon and Iraq. That's who invaded them the day after they were given their independence. This world is against the way we think. They are. And it's gone through the World War I's and II's, and we're staring it in the face today. But just like what we've seen here, God can take a king, a president, national leaders that don't believe the way that we do, and somehow he can make them do an about-face, and we can be given the things that we need to carry on that God wants us to do. We've seen him turn Egyptian pharaohs. We've seen him turn Persian kings that owned so much land. We've seen him turn these individuals and help his cause. And we know, we have to know that he can do that today during this presidential election that we have that's going to have a world impact. We have to know that if Trump is elected, if he's not, our job doesn't change. If the United States of America is considered to be number one in 10 years, or if we're considered to be lower than Ethiopia, our job doesn't change. We still serve the Lord. Any thoughts? We'll read into chapter 8 a little bit. These are now the chief of their fathers, and this is the genealogy of them that went up with me from Babylon in the reign of Artaxerxes the king. So we're going to read about a lot of names here that we don't necessarily need to, honestly, or for my study right now anyway, and if you all want to jump into it, we can. But reading this genealogy and the names and things like that is definitely needed. As you seen there a minute ago, we took Ezra's lineage back to his father because that was listed. And so sometimes when you read over these names, it may not be relevant then, but you need to recognize when it gives this genealogy, it's for a reason. It's so you can track this back. So for right now, we may kind of go over that, but it's talking about the chief of their fathers and the genealogy that they brought back. But my main concern is with chapter 8, 15 through 19. We're going to pick up there on the 15th verse. And I gathered them together. This was all the names there in the past few verses. And I gathered them together to the river that runneth to Ahava. And there abode we in tents 3 days. And I viewed the people and the priest and found there none of the sons of Levi. So after he gathered them all up at their own free will, he took a few days to assess who was coming with him. I believe he wanted to write these down. Him being a scribe, I believe that he wanted to know accurately who was coming and who wasn't. And then that's when he realized, we don't have any of the sons of Levi. Then sent I for Eliezer, for Ariel, for Shemaiah, and for and Nathan, and for Jerib, and for Ethnathan, and for Nathan, and for Zechariah, and for Meshullam, chief men, also for Jorib, and for Ethnathan, men of understanding. And I sent them with commandment unto Iddo, the chief at the place Casiphia. And I told them what they should say unto Iddo and to his brethren, the Nethinans, at the place Casiphia, that they should bring unto us ministers for the house of our God. So Ezra's kind of persuading these individuals, and he is kind of relying on this Iddo and his influence to kind of prod them a little bit and say, you know what, we could use some help. And in the 18th, and by the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of understanding of the sons of Mali, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, and Sherebiah with his sons and his brethren 18, and Hashabiah, and with him Jeshiah and the sons of Merari, his brethren and their sons 20. Also of the Nethinims, whom David and the princes had appointed for the service of the Levites, 220 Nethinims, all of them were expressed by name. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might afflict ourselves before our God to seek of him a right way for us and for our little ones and for all of our substance. So we read through several names there, but in short, he asked Iddo, hey, use your influence to get some Levites to come our way, and they were provided. So now they've got the Levites, and now after he's got them all gathered there at Ahava, now what does he do there in the 21st? Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava that we might afflict ourselves. Afflict ourselves in this text probably more like humbling ourselves, a moral, not a physical discipline. So what he's saying here is let's get humble. Let's get our mind on the Lord. Let's get our mind on this travel. And it says that before our God, to seek of him a right way for us. So to seek a right way, a direct road maybe, a safe road, that there would have been possible attacks that was going to be coming their way for caravans that would have been traveling through there, whether they had the letter or not. There's going to be things in their way. There's going to be obstacles in their way that they may not be able to overcome. And this is a long journey that we know. But they sought the Lord before they went on this journey. And the next thing they asked prayer for, and for our little ones. They weren't traveling just a band of men going over there. They're bringing their families. And they're asking prayers for their little ones along the way, because they know things can happen along the way. Sickness, or maybe people jump them. Maybe they've got to fight their way through there. They don't know what to expect. And for all of our substance. So they prayed for their substance. They prayed for their little ones. They prayed. They've asked the Lord to help them with all these things. Fine direction. We can use this today. And in the 22nd, for I was ashamed to require the king, a band of soldiers and horsemen, to help us against the enemy in the way. So no doubt the king would have gave it to them. No doubt had they have asked him, Lord, help us that we're about to go on this journey, and let's ask the Persian king that he would send some men to kind of help us out. We'll see that in Nehemiah. They'll appoint people to travel with him to make sure he doesn't run into that. But Ezra and them was going it alone. And this is why. Because he said he was ashamed to ask the king. And the reason being, because we had spoken unto the king, saying, the hand of our God is upon all of them for good that seek him, but his power and his wrath is against all of them that forsake him. So in this instance, he's like, I don't think we need to ask the Persian king for this. We've already told them of our faith. Now this would be a lack of faith if we didn't go ahead and go, knowing that God would protect us. It's pretty much what he's saying. So also another reason for their prayer. So we fasted and besought our God for this, and he was entreated of us. In the 23rd, it says he was entreated of us. So receptive to or answered our prayers. Then I separated 12 of the chief of the priest, Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their brethren with them, and weighed unto them the silver and the gold and the vessels, even the offering of the house of our God, which the king and his counselors and his lords and all Israel there present had offered. I even weighed unto their hand 650 talents of silver, and silver vessels 100 talents, and a gold of 100 talents, also 20 basins of gold of 1,000 drams, and 2 vessels of fine copper, precious as gold. And I said unto them, ye are holy unto the Lord, the vessels are holy also, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering unto the Lord God of your fathers. Watch ye and keep them until you weigh them before the chief of the priests and the Levites and the chief of the fathers of Israel at Jerusalem in the chambers of the house of the Lord. So took the priests and the Levites the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem unto the house of our God. So he appointed these individuals to be keepers of all of these things, and they weighed them up, and they knew what they were when they left, and they had better be there whenever they got there to weigh them again. And when we read earlier in this book about Zerubbabel, and they were bringing over some things with them, they counted that, is how it was referred to, but this time they weighed it. So a little bit different. I just found that to be a little bit different. But as long as they can keep a tally on it, they know what they left with. They want it to be there when they get there. And they appointed individuals to take care of these precious things for the good of all of them that were going. So on the 31st, then we departed from the river of Ahava on the 12th day of the first month. So remember, they gathered there, started their, got them all together. They were there 3 days. They then prayed, and they afflicted themselves by fasting. And it says, on the 12th day of the first month to go unto Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was upon us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy, and of such as lay in wait by the way. And we came to Jerusalem and abode there 3 days. So it didn't tell of anything that they had to overcome. It didn't tell of not the first obstacle that they ran into. It said the Lord had delivered them. So I believe they had a pretty smooth ride. Even though it took them right at 4 months, 3.5 every bit of it, actual travel time. But like how we came to Jerusalem and abode there 3 days. Now, keep this in mind. We talked about it earlier. These are people that's never been there. They've heard the stories. They've probably read about it. They've heard about Solomon's temple. They've heard about the new temple that was built back. This is all ingrained in these people. They've never been there. And they got there. What do you think he was doing for those 3 days? They were celebrating, I think. I believe they were just absolutely worshiping the Lord for what they had seen. Their brethren that was there, probably kinfolk way down the line, some of them had left 80, 100 years ago. Temple's been built over 60 years at this point. Took them 20-something years to build it. So they've got bloodline over there that had already left out of Babylonian captivity and been there for going on 80 years. But they've got family over there. And you know, just like us this morning, when we all come in, we had a lot to talk about. Well, evidently they had 3 days to talk about it. I just got a lot out of that. In the 33rd, now on the 4th day was the silver and the gold and the vessels weighed in the house of our God by the hand of Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the priest. And with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas. And with them was Jozabad, the son of Jeshua, and Neodiah, the son of Benaiah, Levites, by numbers and by weight of every one, and all the weight was written at that time. Also the children of those that had been carried away, which were come out of this captivity, offered burnt offerings unto God of Israel, 12 bullocks for all of Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, 12 he-goats for a sin offering. All this was a burnt offering unto the Lord, and they delivered the king's commissions unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors on this side of the river, and they furthered the people and the house of God. We may just stop right there. But they furthered the people and the house of God, encouraging those people. Those people had been over there for a long time, and we'll read on in just a little bit. They'd got the temple built. Physically, they did what they needed to do, but spiritually, they were weak. And that's what Ezra was bringing back. He's going to establish a culture. He's going to help out with all those things and all the people that went with him, not just Ezra as an individual, but God sent him, and then I believe God told him the individuals to pick, and you could read back through that genealogy. But God's hand was all over that, and for a four-month journey to get there. And then what did they do? They offered it to God. They made sure to give him what was his. Any thoughts on any of that this morning? If nothing else, you can just consider yourself dismissed this morning.